There's a story that I've heard. It's hard to say whether that story could ever be verified, but I like it like that, right? It's a man that once went to climb a mountain, and as it became, and as cloud suddenly rushes onto him, he realizes in trouble, and he needs to get down from the mountain. But it wasn't like Alkutzenberg Mountain, it was like proper cliffs and so on. So it's the whole ropes and the whole do. And before he knew it, he found himself in a fairly dark place trying to find his way down the mountain. And at some stage, as it's getting dark and he's getting down, he slips, and he hangs. And he looked down, but he can't see a thing. And so then, at some stage, out of desperation, he started shouting, "Help! Help!" He hears nothing. See, he hears again, oh, he shouts again, "Help!" And he hears the Lord whisper to him, "Cut the rope." So he goes, "Anybody else?" Now, the story goes like that. The next morning, they found a man frozen to death, hanging on a rope, 4 feet above the ground. Hard to know whether that story was ever verified, since the man was alone there, but it's still a great story. So, I think the word of the Lord today for some of us here is to cut the rope. Is to cut the rope. And you can't see anything, and so there is a little bit of a, anybody else, just give me a torch. Just help me to see in some ways. So, it's so cool. We've got a family from Oudtshoorn here. So, right? You guys are Oudtshoorn here. Springbok. I don't want to say it's the same thing, but it's not. I know. I would not make that mistake. But similar. So my parents had a farm in the Karoo, Williston. So, I was never interested in it, and as a young man, I once went to visit the farm, and people would know the operations on a farm is every now and then you need to look out for the sheep, so you bring the sheep in, and you need to see if there's any sicknesses and parasites on it. So there's a dip. You need to put certain things on them, and it's a bit of a process. You know where most diseases kind of comes with the sheep? It's at the back, right? And what they would do is they would get the sheep together in the kraal, the sheep folding, and I would stand and observe this. And so usually how it will work, there's a little gate there, and there's stand a man with a gate at the gate. And at that gate, he stands with injections that is as thick as my pinky, it feels like. There is then all kinds of pipes and then quassies and stuff that they will then apply to this sheep. And so the one guy stands in the gate ready to inject and do everything else, and the rest of the workers goes out and they catch this sheep. It's quite small space, so there's not a lot of moving space for them. And so it's in the beginning quite easy to catch them. And so these sheep is, they first find themselves in this narrow space, and then the next moment they feel a hand on their leg. So they never carry the sheep nicely, picks them up, takes them to the guy. No, they catch them at his back feet, and then the sheep is trying to kick to get loose, obviously, but they've got all the control, and just drag the sheep slowly but surely to the gate. While this sheep is kicking, he's backtracking all the way to the gate. As soon as they get to the gate, they turn him around and throw the sheep that he lays in this position. Back on the guy's knee, like, whoop-a-fleck. And then the needle comes out. Kwasi, pipe, and they put it in places that you don't want pipes seeing, right? I would assume not a nice experience for the sheep. And then the next moment they will open up the gate and just kick the sheep out, and the sheep will move out. And every time the sheep would do this, he would run that first couple of steps, thinking he's still in danger, realizing after a couple of steps, nobody is following him. And then you could see this stopping, realizing nobody's following him in the amazement. Like, what was that all about? Shaking his head and just walking on, you know. And that was the process of every sheep that kind of gone through. It was this initial battle of, what you know, what are you doing? And then dragging me to a place that I don't want to be dragged in. And then needles comes out. And, you know, okay, it's obviously you want to kill me here now. And then, no, I'm free. And then the clear thought that comes up to that sheep is, what was that all about? Why? And then he's off. And as I was sitting there, I had this thought, you know, looking at the sheep. I'm thinking, actually, we're doing a good thing to that sheep. You know, he's going out. He's being protected from all the diseases and stuff that's in the fell. But he doesn't have any clue. He has no clue what's happening to him. Look, if you want to do a good thing to a sheep, you just give him a bunch of lucerne or a bunch of nice food. That's blessing me. But what you just did was this most awkward, not nice thing. And somehow I had, you know, it was like naive, it was like thought, it was like, imagine I could just explain to the sheep. It was actually, it was like, I felt like the sheep needed an explanation. Guys, it was actually a good thing. And as I had the thought, again, it was one of those moments, as clear as can be, I heard the Lord say to me, that's how I feel. That's how I feel. For he sits with his sheep. And many times work in our lives that at the moment seems, what is that all about? I was happily grazing, happily at that type of idea and future. And some, what? I cannot get loose. And then suddenly, you know, you find yourself for some sort of awkward moments and stuff that's just not pleasant. And then sometimes these things kind of just go over and you're kind of like, why are you allowing this, God? What are you doing? Right? Just give me my lucerne. You know, whatever that would be, you know, but you understand what your lucerne is. And I realize sometimes in the workings of the Lord, his thoughts is really higher than our thoughts. As far as the heavens is from the earth, so far is his thoughts from our thoughts. Have you seen the distance between heaven and earth? It's unmeasurable, actually. It's just always above. That's the point. The heaven is always above the earth. The sky is always above the earth. I mean, it's not like, is it this high, this high, this high? The point is, it's always above. And there's nothing that you can ever do to make the heavens under the earth. It's always just above. It's always above. It's unmeasurably above. Can I say, maybe, just maybe, his thoughts is higher than our thoughts, even higher than my thoughts is above a sheep's thoughts. If you think it's tricky to explain to a sheep, just understand how tricky it is for God to explain to you. If you think your ways and your workings is above a sheep's, I'm telling you, God's is even higher. And so that leaves us with something, you know. But how do we go through something if we cannot understand? We don't understand. And we demand understanding for us to give our hearts. Can I just see how deep it is before I cut this rope? I mean, I'm fine. I'll cut this rope. Just explain to me. Can we just have that type of But he can't. And so the problem for us most of the time, beloved, hands in the hearts of God. Why don't we cut the rope? Because we don't trust him. We don't trust him. And so because we still trust our own judgment above his, and we still trust our own ways above his, we know better. Can I just work it out? And so there's the thing with trust. There's a thing with trust. See, this trust is a form of fear. Fear. Right? We don't trust, and that is fear. Why don't you cut the rope? Fear. And distrust in its essence is fear. You know what casts out fear? Perfect love casts out fear. And the problem why we do not trust God, and the problem why we keep our hands so stuck over that heart, the reason why we don't cut the rope, the reason why we are angry and muffed as this sheep is being dragged to wherever gate, it's because, in essence, we do not believe that he loves us. Because perfect love will cast out all fear. So I've made this example. You guys have heard this example. Some of you have heard this example before. So I'll just illustrate this little point again. All right? Any of you know, I look at my customer that I know would know this game. Spin the bottle. You don't know what I'm talking about. Anybody know spin the bottle? Right? Spin the bottle. Rudy doesn't know what spin the bottle is. So it's interesting. Recently I was in Russia. I asked, anybody know spin the bottle? They were like, he's not asking this question right now. And I could see everybody knows what it is, but nobody wanted to acknowledge that they know what it is. It's like, no, I come in peace. I'm not trying to catch anybody out in that way. But look, I know, and I say explain it to me, then I realize, well, they spin the bottle is a little bit more R-rated. So I was like, oh, not that one. But the one that I would refer to is, you know, the game that we play, Dare, Truth, and Command, right? It is, and how the game would work. Some of us, one person will have the privilege to spin the bottle, and whoever the bottle lands on, the point is showing to, he can ask this person Dare, Truth, and Command. And so, you know, you then have the choice. Either you say truth, which means they can ask you any question, and you must be truthful concerning that, obviously. It's such a great opportunity to embarrass a person. You can get the deepest secrets out of the person, and so on. Or, you know, it's true, they're a command. Well, let's simplify it just to command. Or you can command this person, and he's in your hands. And so, you remember at least the time when you had this privilege, and I at Lincoln, and I'm like, there's always this thing that I wanted to get out of Lincoln. I know it'll be great fun for everybody if we get the secret from Lincoln. Actually, it's a secret that I know, but nobody else knows. Now's my opportunity just to expose Lincoln a little bit. And I'm going, Lincoln, have you ever? Not even your wife knows, but Lincoln. Right? Or Lincoln is brave and he says, come on. And I'm thinking, I have the power in my hand to embarrass him now in whatever way. And boom, the wrath falls. And, you know, you make him do something that he walks. It's like part of the fun of the game, you know. You don't go like, okay, it's Lincoln's turn now. Lincoln, can I wash your feet? No, that's not what you do. You know, you would you allow me to wash your feet? No, that's not what you do. You know, but you know how they say the wheel is always turning, the bottle is always turning. And one time it's Lincoln's turn. And the bottle falls on me. And I see in his eyes revenge. You made my wife realize this about me. You made me do this. It's my turn now. And as you look up and you see his eyes, I don't care who you are. You know what emotion comes up in you? I mean, your face is brave. But there's fear. There's fear. Because somehow you're not convinced about the intent of the man behind the bottle. In fact, I can see in his eyes very clear what the intent is of the bottle. Now, this is the funny thing, because in some ways, not like we played spin the bottle, but we are in the hands of God. Truth or command, guys? Truth and command. You're in my hands. Whatever I command, I require full truth. Those things that you do not even want to acknowledge to yourself. Don't cover. Don't make excuse. Don't justify. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. No, I'm not. I am, Lord. I know I've pretended and I've showed this face, but actually I am. I'm not a dapper mice. I'm fearful. Right? It's that moment when he plays. And unfortunately, if we are not convinced of the face behind that bottle, there's always going to be fear. And so, perfect love will cast out all fear for us ultimately. Oh, thank you. I didn't even give that verse. They just know these. It's like our Ivy goes. Yeah. There is no love. Oh, there's no fear. It's a bad mistake. There is no fear in love. But perfect love casts out fear. For fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has not been perfected in love. You know, this, it's like Yuck struggles still with the technology, so his daughter needs to put it up. you know, we had a leader's time this weekend, and Naku, there's two words that came out. Naku said, there is feeling something of us that sometimes preserve ourselves in the measure that we give ourselves to God. It's like, if I give myself fully to God, if I let go all strings, if I, like the woman in the with the alabaster flask that rushes into Jesus, Mary, and break this flask, almost whatever she has, this valuable thing, and seem to waste it upon the Lord, well, there will be a lot of waste, firstly. But if I'm not preserving myself and throwing myself fully on the Lord, what encroachment on my time? What encroachment on my career? What encroachment on my dreams? So I will give myself, but calculate it. I can give you so much as soon as it gets there. And so let's be clever in how we give ourselves for the Lord. We want to be effective in all our ways. I give 10 measures to get 10 measures out. I don't want to give 20 measures and seem to get nothing out. That will be a waste, and we don't want to waste. This woman clearly knew who was on the other side of the bottle. This woman clearly understood the love of Jesus. She's not going to hold anything back. Whatever, my Lord, do with me, whatever. I'm withholding nothing. I'm not keeping anything back. My time, my effort, my savings, my plans, my everything. And as she breaks it on the feet, you know what the disciples say? You know what the disciples say? This could have been used so much better. We could have been more effective. This was a little bit of a waste. Jesus says, whatever this woman has done, learning not to preserve anything, not to have any sort of calculation, but whatever this woman has done would be retold wherever the gospel is preached. This message is inseparable from the gospel. This story of this woman will be linked to the gospel wherever this gospel has gone. She has learned the secret. Throw it all. Waste it all is the key. There, come on. Here I am. Take it all, Lord. But it's a woman that understood the love of the Lord. Then there's another word that came out, and this is what Warren shared with us. He said he feels like in this season, there will be a season of pruning for many in the congregation. That's cute, really. It's helping me. It's like, you know, the wine dresser comes around. The shepherd comes around. What's the need of the sheep? The wine dresser comes around. What's the need of the vine? And, you know, it's just, fertilize me a little bit. Sprinkle me a little bit with water. No. That's not what's needed. If only scissors comes out. If we really want to see fruitfulness, I need to dig in there. It's like, just work so hard for this. It's so precious. Don't touch it. Cuts it off. And whatever is precious to us, he will cut away. I'm telling you guys, we find ourselves in the dealings with God as, what are you doing? I just want to say that every now and then you get this surrendered sheep. It's like, he's checked it out. He's going to lose it anyway. So you check the process and he just goes like, all right, there we go. You go lay there. All right, there we go. Do it. And he goes off. He's the guys that got the least injured. There was the least kicking back. And whenever there was the least kicking back, there was the least amount of pain. Right? But I'm just saying is that scissors comes out. You don't know, Lord. You don't know how hard, you don't know how precious this is. No. Trust me. Trust me. Let go. No, Lord. It's everything that I've ever dreamed of. Trust me. So I'll end off with this little verse that actually is there. Matthew 16. So Jesus just makes this announcement. I mean, it's just like, I would say Jesus' trust to the Father must have been so immense. I mean, he does just before the end go, Father, I just one last time want to check, if at all possible, can this cup pass me by? But Father, yet not my will, your will be done. Do what you need to do, Lord. I trust you. I trust you. I revere you. Do what you need to do. But he was very aware of that, and he announces to these guys in the peak of his ministry, with the crowds and everybody there, listen, guys, just on this high note, on this seeming to have great influence, people want to make him the king of Israel. I just want to say it on this moment, guys. I'm about to be captured and dragged in front of an unfair judge that will judge me and cause me to be crucified, and I will die. Is that for a faith teacher? Right, guys? And Peter, obviously, he's the man of faith. He's like, no, 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 Jesus. And he pulls Jesus aside. And he says, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke Jesus. I just want to say, none of you have ever rebuked Jesus, right? What are you doing, Jesus? We've all at some stage rebuked Jesus, because from glory to glory is not from glory to glory in his mind. Our glory to glory and his glory to glory is so different, right? Well, I'm awesome now. I will. No, where are you taking me? Next level is just different. And so we all have done that, right? We took Jesus aside and just saying, your plan doesn't seem so good here. I've got a better plan here that will work out much better. And you tune in. And he goes, far be it from you, Lord. This shall never happen to you. But he returned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a hindrance to me. For you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man. You don't think like God, you think like man. Your thoughts are like the thoughts of a man. You process and you value like a man. My thoughts is just so much higher. And what you're trying to do, Satan, aka Peter, is you trying to bring my value system, my consideration system, back to that of a man. And I will not allow that. I don't value and I don't process like that. Then Jesus told the disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever would save his life would lose it. But whoever loses his life, who breaks the alabaster flask, who has no reservation, loses his life for my sake, will find it. That's it, right? So, I just quickly want to say, you know, denying, being a follower of Jesus, being that sheep, takes denying of ourselves. Now, we understand that, Jesus, I want choppies. No, now I need to eat salad. I'll deny myself and not eat the choppies and eat the salad. You know, that's in a type of a low-level understanding. I want this. No, you can't have it. You must do that. That's the general, I can't get my way type of things. But that's not what Jesus is saying there. He's just saying, you can't have your way. He says, the very starting point of following me is to deny yourself. Who's yourself here? I had a couple of years ago, well, many years ago, I was not dead, and I'm not as dead then as I'm now, and hopefully I will be more dead in 10 years from now's time as well. But I didn't understand what it means to deny yourself. I understood, like, I can't get my way. But there were certain things about myself, which I thought is in God, was given to me, that's sacred and precious. And even Him would understand that's not touchable. Who are you? And who are you known as? For yourself and the community. All right? What is Warren? Just think of Warren. What do you think of? Warren is? If I think of Warren, I think of certain things. And I know he thinks of himself in certain ways like it, and that's how the community has seen him. And because of that, he's got a certain identity. Delia is a worship leader. Isn't that the worship leader? That's who she is. It's something that God has given her. Right? And so there's each one of us has certain things that is always make who we are. It's what gives us identity in the community. And there were certain things that I thought that will give me identity in the community. And as a young Christian, I was a little bit rebellious. I was a know-it-all, thought I know better, and all those type of things. And at some stage, you know, as I thought, like, I got serious revelation on the things of God. Until today, actually, if I think about it, not much of that revelation has changed. I've still held on to it. But then, as I had this revelation from God, I realized that some of the ways that our leaders are leading the church and are preaching the gospel or preaching the message is not similar. And so first I go like, no, you need to change. No, they're not going to change. So I'm going like, all right, I'm going. Thank you very much. I'm going. If you don't see it as heavenly as I do, right? And then, I mean, as clear as day, God spoke to me, no, you need to stay. So then I said to God, all right. Which, I mean, I'm saying it cheaply now, but I'm telling you, it was like a death blow to me and everything. Oh, how to pick up the will of God. Oh, it was a death blow to me. So I'm sticking with these people that genuinely in my heart, I think I know more than them. You know how hard is it to submit to people that you think you know better than them? Yeah. She just voiced what was in all of our hearts, but thank you very much. So then I said to the Lord, right, this is what I'll do. I'll do whatever they say, but I'm not going to give them my heart. If they say go left, I'll go left. Well, let's decide. Left. Right. But I'm not giving my heart, as in, here it is. I trust you and follow you as the Lord. And the Lord spoke to me and said, give them your heart. I said, no, I can't do that. And I felt like I've got an argument here with the Lord. It's like in the young days, you still argue because you think you're going to win. Maybe. But after losing every time, you start just, all right. But I still had the thought I could maybe beat the Lord in this argument. And I said to the Lord this. I said to him, God, me giving my heart and me laying down some of the revelation that you've given me and the way that I see things, that would be like, Lord, that would be like denying myself. Yeah, exactly. Lord, that's what makes me me. That's what who I found myself in you. That is being the worship leader. I mean, I'm like, it's what you no, you can't do this, God. This is, I mean, you guys. I mean, it's deny yourself. And I that day when I denied myself in that way, It's like, you know, I don't know, it's like when you feel you died, that which has made you you. You know, one of these things about denying yourself is, I was in leading a Bible school training group, and there was a German girl. Yeah, and she had a strong will. And so I was trying for her to just kind of do the ways of the Lord. So I kind of used a little bit spiritual manipulation. I'm like, would you do whatever God command you? I mean, surely any good Christian will say yes, sir. So if I can get that box ticked, I can get her kind of squeezed into that corner. I said, would you do whatever God says to you? She says, well, it depends what it is. And I realize not many is so honest as that German girl. But actually, all of us will obey God. It depends what it is. There is a certain line. And what Jesus is saying, look, when it comes to that moment, it's too late. Meaning, it is something that all of us at some stage have to make up in our hearts that we denied ourselves. Spin the bottle, truth or command, I trust you. This is a blank sheet here. My heart is a blank sheet. God, you write on it whatever. There is nothing of mine. In fact, some of us does it like this. I've written the story in my heart. I've got this type of dream that I have and this type of career that I have and that type of thing. And Jesus, it is up for editing. Just a little bit. You can make it greater if you want. No, no, no. Wipe it off. Wipe it off. Clean sheet. Like in our course, denying ourselves. So Jesus says, whoever wants to follow me, I need a clean sheet. Thank you very much. I need a clean sheet. I know you've been abused. I know there was sometimes when your hand was in people's lives and the command was out of insincerity and out of abuse. But I'm a loving father. I'm a good shepherd. Come on, surrender, surrender, clean, clean sheet that I can write on it whatever. When I was part of this training school, there was a time that there was this call, guys, we will go wherever Jesus sends us. And the one girl, again, just very honest, stood up and she says, I'll go wherever Jesus sends me. What if he sends me to Papua New Guinea? Meaning, I'll go to Europe. I'll go wherever in Europe. But what if he doesn't send me to Europe? This is, what did I read in her? I read fear in her. There was a reservation of fully giving myself to the Lord. But what if I give myself to the Lord and he does that? That question doesn't come up if we trust the one that stands behind the bottle. Don't use this line out of context, please. Right? And then it says, deny yourself. Pick up your cross. Do you know what's a cross? Deny yourself, pick up your cross. Well, let's make it important here. It's your cross. It's this is what I often see, you know. People feel the need to kill themselves every now and then. I always joke. It's like, you know, it's the one means of killing that you can't use suicide. No one can commit suicide by crucifixion. Try and kill yourself for crucifixion. You can get maybe one nail. It's like, I can't, you know. God will kill you. He's faithful. You don't have to try to do it yourself. Right? He will pick a cross out uniquely for you. You don't have to do any initiative on that. And so I see people pick up stuff in the name of sincerity, in the name of goodwill, in the name of all kinds of things. No. Don't do it. Wait for the cross that Jesus will bring to you. How does that cross look like? So I don't know how theologically sound it is, but I think this is the best explanation that I can have of how the cross looks like. A cross looks like this. Your will goes this way. God's will goes this way. And if you've been a Christian for longer than 2 days, you might have encountered that your will and His will cross. And all that Jesus wants you to do is to deny yourself and pick up His will, not your will. And your will and His will cross many times. Pick it up. There's a third point here. And follow me. You know, I've seen reluctant cross-picking uppers. You know, Jesus convinced you so much, everybody tells you, you need to pick up this cross. Right? You cannot sidestep it. It's like, okay, this is my cross. I'll pick it up. So I've seen it many times. Believers reluctant picking up of cross, trying to prove to Jesus that this is wrong. So I've seen, for instance, when I was at the Bible school, I see people come there, and I knew it's God for them to be there. And then they will do this, but they don't want to be there. And so they go like, and they arrive. They go like, okay, I'm here now, and what now? Huh? What now? Why is my life not changing? Is this it? Is this it? It's like, you've picked up your cross, but you've not followed Him. You've picked up His cross to disprove Him that this is the right will. It costs this. God, I'll pick up your cross, meaning I pick up your will, not just starting, okay, I'm here now. I'm in Stellenbosch now. That's a weak cross, by the way. That doesn't really count. But continue to bear that cross, please. Please. But it's like, say for instance, you need to pick up the severe cross of coming to Stellenbosch. Right? You have to come all the way from Gauteng to Stellenbosch. Oh, Jesus. So, but as you come here, your attitude and your heart is like, you know, you don't give yourself for that. I'm here, but you not give yourself for being here. I'm here to show you that this was wrong. I'm reluctant and I'm moany about everything. No, pick up your cross and walk that will out as if it is before the Lord. Don't just, He needs the full package, God. Anyone wants to be His disciple? Jesus puts it for us there. Anyone wants to be His disciple? Deny yourself. Pick up your cross. And follow Him. Let's pray.